Hello, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here. Another episode of You're the Cure. We've got a great show today and a great guest that's joining us today. And we're going to shift gears a little bit out of COVID. Although I think most of our listeners now are associating COVID with corruption. So we might kind of touch on that because part of today's show will go into some corruption. But we're going to focus on the testimony. I always quote that verse in Revelations about the dragon will be overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the testimony of the witnesses. So in modern medicine, we consider anecdotal reports to be very low on the evidence-based ladder, and even probably we dismiss them as professional, intelligent, highly trained medical doctors. Anecdotal reports or testimonies of the witnesses are not to be listened to, really. However, I remind folks that it was one testimony, one anecdotal report that opened my eyes to quote-unquote alternative medicine. And then it was 10 more testimonies of my own patients that I'd taken care of for years, and they all got well doing quote-unquote alternative things. So I'm definitely biased now where anecdotal reports get my attention. And I want to say real quick on this quote-unquote alternative, I want to remind everybody, which if you're a long-term listener, you already understand, that the United States healthcare system comes in dead last across the board with almost in every health category you can think of, whether it's the number of our children with a chronic disease, which is about 54%, or whether it's the number of people over age 65 with more than two chronic conditions, or life expectancy, or infant mortality, or you name it. Pull any health stat out of the hat, and we're going to come in dead last, except for spending. We spend the most money by far, like double or triple probably by now. So we spend the most money to get the worst outcomes. So in any other industry, we would be looking for an alternative. The board of directors would be fired, and the shareholders would be looking for an alternative to a very poor outcome, very poor track record. So I just want to put that caveat out there as we talk today about cancer and cancer therapies and what we have people call all the time with what should I do? I've got cancer. And usually it's when patients have been told there's nothing more we can do, and then they go searching out for a quote-unquote alternative solution. So we've got a guest today that has overcome cancer, put it into remission. I don't know if we're allowed to say the word cured. The FDA, I think, is in charge of that word. You can't claim a cure unless you've proved to the FDA through specific studies and trials, clinical trials, that your therapy cured something. So we'll be careful with that word. But enough about that, and I'm sure we'll get into that too, the monopoly on the word cure. So today's guest, I'm very happy to introduce to you today, Chris Warrick. Chris's website is chrisbeatcancer.com. Chris, welcome to the show.
Dr. Ben, thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for spending some time to educate our audience and to give them your testimony. First, you know, I like to have our guests kind of give their own bio, kind of tell the audience who you are, where you came from. How are you here now talking to me about cancer and running a website that says Chris Beat Cancer? And any comments on that opening little monologue too, but just kind of introduce who you are and let our listeners know.
Yeah, well, I'm a 17-year holistic colon cancer survivor. I was diagnosed at 26. I had surgery, but refused chemotherapy and radically changed my diet and my entire life, mind, body, soul, spirit, radical transformation of my life in order to help my body heal. And I survived. And I not only survived, but I thrived by making those changes. And again, 17 years ago, it was 2003, is when I first started this journey. And of course, we can talk about the details of my story as we get into the interview. But in 2010, I started a blog to share my story called Chris Beat Cancer. And it really just took over my life. And so I've been a full-time patient advocate, started out as a part-time patient advocate and survivor in 2010, and then around 2015 it really snowballed. And so now I'm an author. I've published two books. I've got a new book, cookbook coming out called Beat Cancer Kitchen. It comes out in November.
Awesome.
And so published some books and have a course called Square One, where we help patients and people who are into prevention get through, you know, understand how they can change their life and how the daily choices they make can have a huge impact on their health.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's what I do. And man, I really appreciate what you said about anecdotal testimonial, because they're often dismissed, as you said, by scientists and the medical community as meaningless. But we know if you just take a look at history, every major scientific and medical discovery started with an anecdote, right? The anecdote is the catalyst for discovery. It's the one story, it's the one curious thing, right, that is a surprise, that doesn't make sense, that leads a doctor or a scientist or a layperson down a path of discovery. And it is so important that we listen to each other, because, and you know, we can get into this if you want, but so much of science is corrupted by greed. And we have huge corporations funding science in order to sell drugs and ignoring science that does not result in a patentable, highly profitable drug. So there are hundreds of thousands of studies on nutritional science, on diet and lifestyle medicine, on what are called, quote unquote, alternative therapies, which are natural and non-toxic approaches to health and healing. And these studies are just as valid scientifically, but they're ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it's very hard to make billions of dollars on garlic or green tea or broccoli or turmeric. Okay, so, you know, so the entire MO, right, of the pharmaceutical industry is to develop new drugs that they can get a patent on and then make billions on those new drugs. And as soon as there's something new, the old drugs, even if they're effective, are ignored. Right? They're just like, oh, that's old. That's an old drug. The new drug. It's the new one. Everyone should take the new one.
Yeah.
And so this is the playbook. We've seen it happening around the world with COVID, with the vaccines, and with this new antiviral drug that Merck is pushing. But it's the playbook has been around for decades, for the better part of 100 years.
Yeah.
So it's very much been at play in the cancer world for a long time. And I learned this very early in my journey. And so when all this stuff started happening in 2020, I was like, this is very familiar. These are very familiar tactics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to go back in that journey. You said 2003, you were 26 years old at the time, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Talk about your first, you know, 26 years. Would you consider yourself kind of a standard American guy? Just grew up doing kind of what we all grew up doing in the, I guess it'd be the 80s and 90s maybe.
Yep.
Just standard
child
American
of,
food.
Child of the 80s. Yeah. Born in 77, child of the 80s, had my first birthday at a McDonald's. First birthday party. Yeah, for sure. I grew up eating the standard American diet, the Western diet, which is a diet that's very high in processed food, fast food, and junk food, very high in meat, dairy, sugar, salt, and oils. And, you know, a lot of people can get away with eating that diet before chronic disease catches up to them. They can get away with it for a long time. But some people, it catches up to them quickly. I was diagnosed with cancer at 26. Some people get diagnosed with diabetes or MS or, you know, there's a number of chronic diseases that are related to and known to be caused by poor diet and lifestyle and environmental factors. And anyway, you know, I was susceptible. And at 26, I started having abdominal pain. My life was great. I was really excited about it. I was a newlywed and was in the real estate business and was a musician. And I was just, you know, things were going really well. I was excited about the future and about the things I was doing. But anyway, I started having abdominal pain and eventually had a colonoscopy because the pain got worse and worse over the course of the better part of that year. And they found a golf ball sized tumor in my colon, which if you'd asked me what a colon was before that, I would have told you it's a punctuation mark. I did not know the colon was also the large intestine. Okay. Yeah. let me just make sure everybody knows how clueless I was about human anatomy.
It's good of you to be so honest, Chris.
Yeah. So, I was told, well, they did a biopsy. It was definitely cancer. And they said, doctor called and said, we've got to get you into surgery right away, get this thing out of you before it spreads and kills you. And this is very common in the cancer world. Patients are rushed into treatment out of fear. Mm. And a moment ago when I said I recognize the playbook, this is what I'm talking about. When you're rushed into a treatment out of fear, you cannot make a good decision. In fact, when you're in a state of fear and anxiety, your stress hormones, adrenaline and cortisol are pumping. They interfere with your brain function. An entirely different part of your brain takes over when you are in a state of stress. And that is basically your brain switches from the prefrontal cortex, which is where you think logically and rationally, and it switches to the back of your brain stem, which is your reptilian brain that takes over, and you become impulsive, irrational, and fearful, and you are not able to make a good decision when you're in this state. And so when you get a cancer diagnosis, here comes a huge wave of fear, right? And you're told you're going to die, but you got to do this treatment right away. And so patients are almost always rushed into surgery or chemo or radiation within just days of a diagnosis. Mm. And they have no idea what cancer is. They have no idea what the treatments involve. They have no idea what the short-term and long-term side effects are. They're told very little. They're told, you might lose your hair, or, oh, you may be sick, you may lose your appetite, but we have some drugs to help you with that. It's shocking how little patients are informed. And I actually created a free downloadable guide. It's called 20 Questions for Your Oncologist. It's on chrisbeatcancer.com. It's on every page of my website, pretty much. There's a link to this free download. And if you have cancer, or if somebody you know has cancer, or if you just want to understand the way the cancer industry rushes patients onto this conveyor belt, then download the guide. It's a 1-hour audio, and I with a list of questions, and I explain all the questions that you need to ask and the answers you'll probably get, and whether or not those answers are actually true or if they're half truths. So it's one of the most valuable things I've created to help the cancer community and just really anyone that's interested in prevention as well. Anyway, so if you don't know the right questions to ask, you're not going to be able to get all the information you need to make. And so there I was, told we got to get you into surgery right away. And this was just a few days before Christmas. And I was able to postpone my surgery about a week, because it was just depressing enough, right? Yeah. Like with having, oh, you're 26 and you have cancer, like, and you're going to be in the hospital on Christmas. I was like, can I please just not be in the hospital on Christmas? So I went in on December 30th. They took out a third of my large intestine and some surrounding lymph nodes that were cancerous. And when I woke up from surgery, they said, it's worse than we thought. You're stage 3C. I was hoping, and they were hoping, that I was stage 2. If you're stage 2, you have surgery, they send you home, that's it. At least that was the protocol back then. It may be a little different now. But stage 3 means you need chemo, because the cancer has spread, and even though they can cut it all out and say, we think we got it all, or it looks like we got it all, cancer cells are microscopic. You know, you can fit somewhere like a billion cancer cells on, the head of a a pencil eraser. So there's no way they can get every cancer cell out of your body, right? That's not possible. So the point of chemotherapy is they're hoping that they can kill the remaining cancer cells that are circulating, and they don't spread and cause more tumors. So a couple things happened in the hospital that got the wheels turning. The first was the very first meal that they served me after cutting out a third of my large intestine. And that meal was a sloppy Joe.
Yep, that would get the red flags going, even for a standard American 26-year-old.
And I don't mean to offend you, because I know this is like your favorite meal of all time, Dr. Ben. Right. But,
back in the day. Back in the day, I could put down two sloppy Joes in no time.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the sloppy Joe is just the absolute best, worst example of industrialized, you know, cafeteria food. And as far as I knew, you know, sloppy Joes, that's only something you get at summer camp or if you're in the military or in prison. And, you know, but here they are. They're serving this to sick people in the hospital. To me, the cancer patient who just had a third of my large intestine cut out. And so that was a bit of a surprise. You know, again, I wasn't a health nut, but I did know what healthy food looked like. You know, if they had brought me a big salad or a bunch of cooked vegetables and some fruit, you know, I would have been like, okay, this looks pretty healthy. So the other thing that happened in the hospital was the day they told me I could go home, my surgeon came in to do one final round with me just to kind of let me know what to expect. And I happened to ask him, hey, is there any food I need to avoid? Because I'm thinking I don't want to eat the wrong thing, right? I just want to know. It's like hot sauce off limits or, you know, whatever. And he said, no, just don't lift anything heavier than a beer.
Go ahead and drink that beer. It's not too heavy.
Yeah. So, and that was it. I mean, literally, the man who cut my, you know, cut a third of my colon out and sewed it back together, stitched me up, did a great job on the surgery, but had zero health advice, like no zero nutrition advice. And that was really surprising to me. So I get home from surgery, from the hospital, I'm recovering from surgery and weaning myself off the pain medication. And as I sobered up over just a few days, because I really wanted, I just didn't like being on the pain meds. By the way, I learned years later that certain pain medications can accelerate metastasis. Opioid-based pain medications. And so that's another good reason to get off them quickly. But, you know, as I sobered up, I started thinking about my life and my future and this idea of poisoning my way back to health. Did not make sense, right? I'm no expert, but I'm listening, you know, I'm an instinctive person. I'm an intuitive person, as most of us are. And, you know, just the common sense logic of it. I understood this is what you do. This is what everybody does. If you have cancer, you do chemo, right? But I'm like, this doesn't make sense to me. And I had seen cancer patients out in the world. I didn't have anybody close to me go through cancer, so I wasn't able to observe a person's cancer journey. But I'd seen advanced cancer patients, you know, at restaurants or the mall or church or something. And it leaves an impression on you when you see a person who is emaciated and no hair and yellow skin. And, you know, a lot of times they were wearing masks. Because back then, that was about the only time you saw a person wearing a mask, because they were an advanced cancer patient whose immune system had been destroyed by chemotherapy. And, you know, I thought that is my future, right? That is what I am going to become. And I didn't like that, right? I didn't like that prospect. So I had a increasing resistance to this treatment, and I didn't know what to do. So I prayed about it. My wife and I are believers, and I just said, God, there's another way besides chemotherapy. Please show me And this was just a humble prayer of desperation, but also faith. I, as a believer, one of the first verses that came to mind right after my diagnosis was Romans 8:28, which says, "And we know that God works all things for the good of those who love him, who are called according to his purpose." And so, that verse doesn't mean that much when your life's going good. Okay. All of a sudden, it just becomes this beacon of hope, right? When your life is falling apart.
Yeah.
He works all things for your good. And by the way, when Paul wrote that, he had been beaten, left for dead, imprisoned, shipwrecked. Like he had suffered through all kinds of insane persecution, trials, and tribulations before he wrote that. Mm. Okay. And so I just thought, okay, I'm going to believe. If I really am a believer, if I really believe the Bible is true and that God created the world and the universe and that he loves me and that his promises are true, then I have to believe this. He's going to work this for my good. I don't like it at all. Mm-hmm. I want to trade places with anybody, but okay, I'm going to believe God's going to work this for my good. And so so I prayed and asked for help, and I also was just saying, thank you. I know you're going to work this for my good. And I thank you that you supply all of my needs according to your riches and glory in Christ Jesus, right? I was just confessing the truth, the scripture. And 2 days later, I got a book that was sent to me by a man in Alaska. Like, the story, you just can't make this stuff up. It's just wild. I live in Memphis, Tennessee. My dad had a business client in Alaska that he had become very close with, very good friends with. And this man named Al sent me a book when he heard I got diagnosed with colon cancer. And this was a book written by another guy named George Malkmus. And George was a former pastor who had seen many church members go through cancer treatment and die. His mother went through cancer treatment and died. Then he found out he had colon cancer and was like, well, I'm not doing that. And he happened to have a friend who was sort of like another pastor, health nut. And his friend said, hey, you need to go back to the Garden of Eden. You need to eat raw fruits and vegetables, and you should probably get a juicer and start juicing. So that's what he did. And he got well in about a year. His tumor healed. And earlier in the beginning of this interview, you used the word cure. And the word cure, it's become sort of a dirty word. And I because people don't trust it, right? Yeah. They've heard it so many times. They've heard, race for the cure. We're one step closer to the cure. With your help, just donate more money. We'll finally get the cure, right? Mm-hmm. And I think most people, they just think, they hear cure and they're like, baloney, right?
Right.
And by the way, it's not about a cure. It's about healing. Yep. The body creates cancer. These are your cells. The body can heal cancer. Your immune system is designed to identify and eliminate rogue cells, cancer cells, not just bacteria, viruses, parasites, fungus, pathogens. No, also cancer cells. That's what your immune system does. That's its job. So, but if you have cancer, right, something's not working, right? You have not just a cancer problem, but you have an immune system problem, which hopefully we can get into some details on that. But just to lay the groundwork here, when I started reading George's testimony, right, one man's story of healing, it ignited this spark of hope in me. And I realized, okay, wow, this is possible. Healing is possible. My doctors never said anything about healing, right? Doctors rarely use the word heal. They use the word treat a lot, mm-hmm. right? Treat and treatments. So I got excited and I was, again, infused with hope that I could heal, that I could survive and thrive. And So overnight, I was like, well, this guy ate a raw food diet. I'm going to eat a raw food diet. And it made sense to me. It made sense that, by the way, he made the case that the reason so many of us are sick with chronic diseases like cancer is because of our diet. It's a huge problem. And our lifestyle choices and environment, like environmental pollution. And stress is another huge underlying cause of chronic disease. Hopefully we can touch on all those things. But I didn't have much information, but I had one man's story. And overnight, I changed my diet. I decided, okay, raw fruits and vegetables, I'm going back to the Garden of Eden too. And I love this idea. I wonder what will happen to me, to my body, if I just only ate raw fruits and vegetables, right? Organically grown, straight from the earth, the purest food for mankind, right? That God created. What would happen? So I was excited. It was like an experiment. It was like an adventure to me. And it made sense to me because I believe that God created the earth for us and that everything we need comes from the earth. I don't think we need anything man-made to survive or to have optimal health. And so I converted my – overnight, I just made a decision. I'm doing this. Raw food. Here we go. I found – you know, where do they sell juicers? Right? Yeah. So I bought a juicer, bought, you know, a giant 25-pound bag of carrots, and I was on my way. But in the meantime, the people – there were multiple family members, including my wife, that did not understand what I was doing. And I ran into – a fair amount of opposition, which was unexpected. And that's really tough because, you know, when you get a word from God, when you get a word from the Lord to do something radical, people around you are not going to understand. And they'll even tell you you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And that is a really difficult place to be, right? Where your faith is challenged. And, you know, it's like you get a word and you're like, I know God answered my prayer. I asked for something. This showed up. This is the answer to my prayer, and I'm gonna walk it out, right? And but again, people around me are saying, no, you know, don't do alternative therapies. You can't do that. They don't help. I know a friend that tried alternative therapies, and they died. You have to do exactly what the doctor says. You have to do chemo, and things got exponentially more complicated. Emotionally, right, and mentally, you know, a typical cancer patient has a lot of support. When you get diagnosed, everybody's like, "Oh, we love you so much. Oh, here's a card. Oh, we brought you food. Oh, we made some T-shirts for you. Oh, we're gonna run a race in your honor. Oh, what can we do? Here's a blanket. Oh, I stitched you some mittens and a special hat." Right?
No one stitched you mittens, Chris.
Yeah. Gosh. Right? And then, you know, you go to your oncology, your chemo appointment. It's like, oh, here's a comfy chair and here's a blanket for you. And can I get you, do you want some donuts or can I get you a Diet Coke? What with your chemo? Mm. Right? This is how patients are treated. They're just, you know, they're pandered to and by the way, for the first time, maybe in a long time, the patient feels loved. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is a little bit tragic, you know, that the first time some people really feel loved and cared for is when they're, you know, deathly sick. Mm-hmm. And that can become addictive, right? That love and attention and care that you're getting as a sick person, mm-hmm. That some people don't want to get well because they don't want the support to end. Yeah. That's a whole nother conversation. Right. But the point is, I didn't get any of that. As soon as people found out that I was changing my diet, that I was thinking about not doing chemotherapy, it was just like poof, you know, like everybody vanished. And it was just crickets chirping around me. And of course, my wife didn't like leave me or anything, but she loved me, right? These are people who love me, but they didn't know how to help me and they didn't know what to say. And they said, you know, just things like, you know, again, I know someone who did that and they died, which wasn't very helpful. So
I'm fortunate and thankful in a way. You know, I was an only child, and so growing up, that was kind of hard. You know, I was kind of lonely as a little kid, but as I got older, of course, I made friends and had friends in high school and all that. But I was very independently minded. You know, that's just what happens when you're an only child. And so I was used to being alone. I was used to doing what I wanted to do, and had always been interested in anything that was outside of the mainstream. You know, whether it was music or art or fashion, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, what is outside of mainstream corporate medicine? Oh, it's natural health and healing. This is interesting. What's this about? So in some ways, it was maybe easier for me than other people to resist the pressure around me, and to continue down this path alone. But it still wasn't that easy. It was still hard.
Well, Chris, before we go down that journey real quick, it's a great story, and I definitely want to continue it. We're up against a break, though. So let's talk about that. Where you, when we get back from the break, independent-minded, and everyone pretty much had left you, not your wife, but you're feeling pretty alone, but also empowered and following the voice of the Lord into this path of healing. So awesome. But we got to take this quick break, guys. Stick with us. We're talking with Chris Warrick. Check out the website, chrisbeatcancer.com. Chris, what's the latest book?
Beat Cancer Kitchen is a
Okay.
plant-based cookbook that comes out November 16th.
All right. Beat Cancer Kitchen. Can't wait to get that book. All right, guys, check out the website, get the book. We will be right back. I am Ben Edwards. You're the cure. Okay, everybody, we're back talking with Chris Warrick, chrisbeatcancer.com. Go check out the website. We're talking about his stage 3 colon cancer 17 years ago.
Yeah, almost
And
18 years.
I want to tell folks, colorectal cancer is the number 2 cause of cancer deaths in the United States. One study published the same year Chris was diagnosed, the recurrence rate of cancer after a curative colon resection was 100% after 4 years. Recurrence rate of 100% at 4 years. The 5-year survival rate for stage 3C colon cancer, 53%. And if you're under age 40, you have a 28% higher risk of the cancer progressing and spreading at the 1-year follow-up, and you're 30% more likely to die. So young people do worse. 5-year survival rate is for, or excuse me, 10-year survival rate for stage 3C colon cancer is less than 20%. And if that's if you have more than 3 lymph nodes, four plus lymph nodes positive. Chris had 4. The chemotherapy they recommended for Chris only increases your 3-year survival by 4%. And there was another study that showed if your colon cancer is on the right side, you do even worse. So all these odds were stacked against Chris. And everything I just read you is from Chris's website. You can go to chrisbeatcancer.com, look under the About tab, frequently asked questions. There's lots of good questions and lots of good answers there, and lots of data, and everything I just read was from there. So just setting the stage a little bit for the fact that Chris was a pretty sick guy. His risk of survival was pretty slim. And that's 5 and 10 year survival, and I'm sure even worse at 15 and 20. And look where he's at now. So, Chris, let's go back to you got the diagnosis, you decided God showed you a different path to go than the standard answer, conventional answer. Family and friends were a little shocked, but you were independent minded and decided to continue down this path. Let me ask you, what did your oncol did you go back to your oncologist, and how did you broach that, or did you broach it? Did you tell him what you're going to do?
Well, I had a lot of family pressure to go meet with an on go see the oncologist, right? Will you just go and just hear what he has to say? So I reluctantly agreed in order to appease the people around me that, you know, they cared for me again. They loved me. They didn't want me to die. And so we went to see this oncologist that I'd been referred to, and the appointment just went really badly. You know, but there was a little mini miracle that happened. We're in the waiting room. We're waiting to go back, And, you know, the TV's on and you're just sitting there waiting. And it was one of the morning shows. And by the way, this is back when they would actually play like real TV in the waiting rooms. Now they have this loop of like pre-programmed, you know, medical programming on the
propaganda.
TV. Yeah, exactly. You said it. So, but back then it was just like, oh, just put the, you know, put on the Today Show or whatever. And so it was one of those shows, morning shows, and out comes Jack LaLanne. And Jack LaLanne starts going off about nutrition and like the reason we're all so sick is because we're eating this diet of processed food and man-made food and junk food. And if man made it, don't eat it. And then he's talking about juicing and fruits and vegetables. And I'm like, I can't believe this is on right now in this moment, right?
Confirmation.
Yeah, it was confirmation. And that's what I was doing. I'd been doing it for 1 week. I'd been eating raw foods only and juicing. And then here's Jack LaLanne on the TV in the cancer clinic telling me I was doing the right thing, right? So that was kind of amazing. But then we go back to see the oncologist, and he was very cold and robotic, had no empathy, and was just, you know, I'm just another patient. He's seeing 20 or 30 patients a day. I don't even know, right? He's seeing a ton of patients every day. He flips through my file. He's like, okay, you're 26. You got stage 3 colon cancer. It's very aggressive in young adults. You know, he didn't tell me any of those statistics that you shared a moment ago. And by the way, they're pretty scary, right?
Yeah.
Like if I had known all of those things, then boy, I would have been even more terrified because the odds were definitely stacked against me. My outlook was extremely grim. But he said, look, you got about a 60% chance of living 5 years with chemo. And that's the only stat I got from the guy. But even that was like, man, 60%? That's pretty close to 50%. And 50% is a coin toss. Mm. And so I'm like, that's not very encouraging. And we're having this conversation, and I happen to say, hey, you know, what about raw food? What about the raw food diet? And he said, no, you can't do that. It'll fight the chemo. And then, which was weird, a weird thing to say. And then I said, well, are there any alternative therapies available? And he was like, no, if you don't do chemotherapy, you're insane. Mm. And then from there, he proceeded. I mean, I just kind of went into total fear and panic mode, right? Deer in the headlights. Because he just proceeded to keep talking and talking and talking and kind of used every tool in the toolbox to convince me that I had to do chemotherapy. And the message was very clear. If you don't do it, you're going to die. And he finally finished talking and we left. And I went straight to the desk and made an appointment to get a port put in a few weeks. To start chemo. And he had done his job. He had convinced me through fear that I had to do chemotherapy. And we walked out to my wife's car. And, you know, when I walked into that clinic, I was feeling really good. I was feeling confident and optimistic. And even seeing Jack LaLanne on the TV, that was kind of a little boost. But man, I'm telling you, when I walked out, I was just devastated. Mm. I was completely consumed by fear. I was hopeless. I was discouraged, depressed. We got in my wife's car and we sat there for a few minutes and held hands and just cried. And I choked out a prayer, you know, just choked out a prayer. And it was, I don't know what I said, but it was, I was at a very low point. And I just thank God that I had time, right? I was still recovering from surgery. So I had like 3 weeks before they wanted to put this port in. And so I just, you know, went home and fired up the juicer and kept going, right? Mm-hmm. I kept juicing. I kept eating raw fruits and vegetables all day, every day. And I kept reading and researching and spent a lot of time in scripture, you know, reading and studying the word and studying what the Bible says and what Jesus says about healing. And I found so much encouragement there. And I realized that Jesus is a healer. That's who he is. That's what he did. He spent all his whole ministry teaching about the kingdom of God, talking about forgiveness and healing the sick. That's what he did. Mm-hmm. And so I was just really focused on those just basic things. And when the day rolled around for me to start chemotherapy, I mean, well, to get the port put in, I didn't go. I was just like, I woke up that morning and I just said, I'm not doing it. Not now. Maybe later, right?
Yeah.
Maybe later. But right now, I want to focus on building up my body. I want to overdose on nutrition. I want to flood my body with all of this good stuff from the earth, vitamins, minerals, enzymes, antioxidants, and all of these wonderful, miraculous compounds, phytonutrients that are in plant food that God made. I want to put that in my body. I want to get stronger and healthier. I want to help myself get well. I don't want to tear myself down further with these treatments. And so so that was the decision I made. And the cancer clinic was calling my house and leaving messages. And they finally sent me a certified letter that I had to sign for, you know, and saying, call your doctor, you missed your appointment, this kind of thing. And then after that, they left me alone. And I found, in that process, I found a naturopathic doctor who was the first person to tell me I made the right decision. He referred me to an integrative medical doctor, an integrative oncologist, who also supported my decision. And I slowly assembled a very small support system. And my mom was a big help too, because she had a huge library of books on natural health and healing and even alternative cancer therapies. It was weird.
Wow.
She had all these books that, you know, that she had collected for 30 plus years. And had never been sick, but she just was really into reading about natural health. And so that was another miracle in my life, is that my mom had this library of books, because back then the internet wasn't helpful. There was no social media. There was no YouTube. Mm-hmm. I had no, you know, I just went from book to book to book, right? And I listened to some cassette tapes and watched some VHS tapes, you know, just that was the way I was learning.
Wow.
And so, you know, the spoiler is I survived, I got well. But I had a team of, you know, healthcare professionals that monitored my progress. And every month we did blood work and we did CT scans every 6 months. And, you know, I just decided to radically change my life in every way. And I want to talk about something before we run out of time that is so important is, you know, we know that 95%, roughly, somewhere 90, 95%, depending on whose study you're looking at, some studies say a little less, but of cancers are caused by three factors: diet, lifestyle, and environment. Okay. The American diet is toxic, it's horrible, it will cause chronic disease. Our lifestyle choices can make us sick. Smoking, that's the number one cause of cancer. The number two cause of cancer, if you ask 100 people, most of them will get this wrong. The number two cause is obesity. Because when you're overweight, and this is not fat shaming, this is just science. When you're overweight, your immune system is suppressed. And you also will produce, fat cells produce molecules that are inflammatory. And so your body is in a vulnerable state. We know that with COVID, obesity is one of the highest risk factors for severe COVID infection and death. Well, it's the same mechanism, right? The same mechanism between a person who's, at risk of dying from COVID or at risk of getting cancer is because their immune system is suppressed by their physical state because they're physically unwell. So alcohol is a cause of cancer. Not exercising and eating a diet that is very unhealthy, right? Both contribute to obesity. So these are obvious things. And guess what? The good news is that your choices can change your life. You can choose to eat healthier. You can choose to exercise. And if you are consistent, you will lose excess weight. You will get back down to your ideal body weight. It's not difficult. It's just a matter of consistency. And so my book, Chris Beat Cancer, is all about, you know, my story and exactly what I did to get well. And so there's a lot more details in there. But the thing I really wanted to get to is the underlying cause of many chronic diseases is this sort of insidious cause that many people don't understand and most physicians don't talk about, and it's stress. Stress leads us to unhealthy diet and lifestyle behaviors that cause disease. Because when you're stressed, when you're carrying around anger and bitterness toward people who've hurt you, when you're in a state of unforgiveness, it's not just a mental state. It's an emotional and physical state. And when you are harboring any negative emotion, whether it's bitterness, resentment, or anger, whether it's worry, fear, and anxiety, whether it's jealousy or envy or insecurity, all of these negative thoughts and emotions produce stress in your body. And it's not the good kind of stress. It's distress. And when you're in distress, your body pumps adrenaline and cortisol. And those hormones, remember earlier I said, they interfere with your brain function. Well, they also suppress your immune system and they also promote inflammation. And so a person who is vulnerable to cancer or other chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease or infectious diseases, they all have these two things in common, chronic inflammation and immunosuppression. And stress causes that, okay? And then what do we do when we're stressed? We find ways to self-medicate. Well, we self-medicate with food. That compounds the problem over time. Or tobacco or alcohol or unhealthy psychological behaviors like gambling or pornography addiction or being a shopaholic or a workaholic. Let's not forget drug use, right? Prescription or illegal drug use to medicate stress. So all of the ways that we are medicating our distress may make us feel good in the short term, right? They get our mind off our problems. But in the long term, they compound our problems. And I should also mention like binge watching, right? Social media addiction, binge watching Netflix, whatever. It's all escapism, right? Video games. It's trying to escape and distract our conscious mind from our problems. But your subconscious mind is never distracted. Your subconscious mind is aware of all of your lingering problems. All of the unresolved stuff from your past is in your subconscious mind. And so the only way to remove the cause of stress is to face it head on. And there's a lot of tools and tactics for doing this, but I want to just focus on one today. And that one is forgiveness. When people hurt you, they cause you pain. And that pain is usually in a moment, right? It's one moment in time. But when you hold on to bitterness and resentment and anger, you keep yourself in that pain. You're holding on to the pain. In fact, it's like you wall up yourself in a prison of pain. And the only way out is through forgiveness. And forgiveness doesn't make it okay what they did, right? But forgiveness releases the pain. That's when you say, God, they hurt me, they caused me pain, but I'm letting go and I'm surrendering that to you. I'm giving it to you. They're all yours. I'm not holding out for vengeance or justice anymore. The Bible says, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. And so that's when you acknowledge that, you say, okay, God, you can deal with them, right? You can deal. I am not going to. And just that simple prayer, it's a decision that you make to forgive. It's not a feeling. Don't confuse the two, right? You're not going to feel like forgiving them ever. But when you make the decision to forgive, that's when God comes in and heals your heart. It's very simple. Like if you have a hard heart, if you have a scarred, beat up heart, a sick heart, you're going to have a sick body. But forgiveness heals your heart. And that is the root cause and the catalyst for healing in your body, right? A root cause of disease solved and the disease resolves, right? You solve the root cause and you resolve the disease. And so, yes, the diet, hardcore healthy diet of fruits and vegetables is amazing, right? Exercise is incredible for you. Boosts your immune function, right? Reducing your exposure to environmental toxins. That's important. All these things are good. But if you don't look inside and make a decision to forgive every person who's ever hurt you, you may not get well. You may stay sick, or you may be on the road to disease if you're holding on to this bitterness and anger. And so I just want to encourage everybody listening. This is what I did, right? Is I made a decision to forgive every person who had ever hurt me by name. And I just spent some time quietly on multiple occasions, just thinking through my life and letting those painful memories come up, and then actively deciding, God, you know what they did. You know how I feel about it, but I'm choosing to forgive them. I'm letting it go, and I'm giving it to you. They're all yours. I'm not going to hold it against them anymore, and I'm asking you to bless them. Yikes, right? I'm asking you to bless them. I don't want you to. I'd prefer if you didn't, right? But I'm just completely humbling myself and putting my pride, you know, I'm just setting my pride aside, and I'm asking you to bless them and have mercy on them. You know, that's what Jesus did on the cross. Mm-hmm. One of the last things he'd said on the cross was, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Isn't that incredible? That in the one moment of Jesus's life on earth where he wanted to forgive the least, right? He chose to forgive, yeah. Right? You know, he didn't feel like it, yeah. But he chose to forgive. He exercised mercy and prayed for his enemies right there on the cross. And so, boy, if Jesus can do that on the cross, there's no reason you can't do it, right? On your couch. Yeah. Right, in your lazy boy, yeah. Right. There's no reason. We have no excuse, and so I just want to leave your audience with this. Just I just cannot stress enough how powerful forgiveness is, how life changing it is, how healing it is. Right. If you want to talk about a cure, forgiveness is a cure. Right. It mm-hmm. is a cure to mm-hmm. your pain, to your suffering. It is. Jesus talked about forgiveness a lot. Yep. So, yeah, I talk about it a lot too in my book, Chris Beat Cancer. And then I have a devotional called Beat Cancer Daily. And then, of course, we got a new cookbook coming out, Beat Cancer Kitchen. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, that's awesome, Chris. As you were talking about forgiveness, two things came to mind. I interviewed Dr. Caroline Leaf. It's been a couple years ago now, but I would encourage listeners, go back and find that episode and get her book too.
She's great.
Because she really connects the science. She, in fact, there was one study in there about the DNA gets tightened up. That double helix will change shape and tighten up with thoughts of bitterness and unforgiveness and anger and rage and all that. And then it loosens up or gets more normal shape. So genetic expression, you know, if you need the science behind everything Chris just said, which we shouldn't need that. And I think those of you, if listening to Chris, it just resonated with you as, that's just truth, and that makes sense. That's your spirit, because the spirit of truth is in Chris, and that's connecting with your spirit. The second thing that came to mind was, you know, I've studied a lot of scriptures that talk about sickness, and in James, when it talks about the disciples said, who sinned, this child or the parents, that caused them to be blind? And Jesus said it was neither this man nor his parents that sinned, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking about. You know, Chris, obviously God made Chris before Chris was in his mother's womb. He made him, set him apart, had this call on his life, obviously. And he didn't send him to medical school. He doesn't have the initials behind his name, but he has the authority because God made him to be a healer, made him to love the truth. And even though he walked out of that oncologist's office with the spirit of fear all over him, he turn back to the truth and look at the fruit that it's produced so that the works of God might be displayed in Chris. And just, I mean, look at his testimony. Look at his 17 years. Look at what he's doing and how many people he's helped and will continue to help and open the eyes and hearts to the true healer, Jesus. So it's just amazing, Chris. What a fantastic story. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Dr. Ben. Yeah, it's been really, really just wonderful to hang out with you and just be able to share a little bit about my story and the things I'm passionate about.
Amen, brother. Well, we'll have to have you back for part two sometime.
Sounds
good. We get into some more stuff. Everybody check out chrisbeatcancer.com. Check out the book. Check out all the things he has to offer there. I am Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure. We'll be back next week with another great show. Thanks for joining us today.